Blog Talk Radio.
There's the snap, hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down, the 40. He's gone. The 35, the 30, the 20. He's gone. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
Woo-hoo. Kick up. Kick is on the way.
It's good. It's good. It's good. Adam Vinatieri goes to 40. 8-yard field goal. And the game is over. And the Patriots.
Gets the snap. He's back. He pumps. Scrambles around. Throws it back corner of the end zone. Santonio with a touchdown. Santonio holds. I don't know how he did it. Dominique Rogers Cromartie doesn't know how he did it. But they rule touchdown in the far right corner of the end zone.
In motion. Comes right. Back to throw Montana. Steps up, throws. Touchdown!
We are back. Yes, indeedy. Fred House, my company here on a Tuesday night. Yes, that does mean it is time for our season debut premiere of our Fred House Sports' Red Zone Blitz, our all NFL program, where we're just going to take a look at what took place this past week in NFL Week 2. X-ing and O-ing some of it. No, the best weekend, anyhow. And we'll, you know, probably mix in a little bit of chit-chat about what we might be able to expect as we move forward into Week 3. Hard to believe already. I mean, we're already talking Week 3. Yeah, we wait and wait and wait and so all this, you know, yeah. And here it is, and now we're talking Week 3 already. It has been a while since we've been on the air. January was the last time that we were here with our Red Zone Blitz program. Wanted to get back in here last week, but that's okay. We had, trying to get programs back online slowly but surely as we move through things over the past couple of weeks of being off. But, hey, Week 2 seemed like a good time to jump back in because, look, if you take a look around the league, listen, there's a couple of things that jump out at me. And I know that it's being, you know, it's gotten the attention of some out there. Was just reading an article just this afternoon, as a matter of fact, over on Pro Football Talk. I kind of chalked it off as, well, first week jitters last week. But now, when you take a look at Week 2, offenses are off, folks. There's no doubt about that. Now, you got to wonder whether... Well, okay, it's still early season, and we're going to see that turn around. We're going to see that come about. But I got to ask a question out there. As we continue to see TV ratings, yes, they are continuing to drop even as we go into another new season. So I suppose we can't be blaming Colin Kaepernick. I suppose we can't be blaming elections. What in the world is the NFL going to do if, in fact, we see a trend where offenses aren't there? Because let's get this one straight. That's what everybody is paying the money for, right? That's what we're tuning in for. People want to see offense in the NFL. And at this point right now, after 2 weeks, they're off. And it's interesting because one of the topics that I have on the agenda for this evening are, in fact, teams that just can't score. When you take a look at teams like the Carolina Panthers, the Seattle Seahawks. Yeah, they've got decent enough records at this point so far early on in the season. But both those teams, we're going to take a look at that power rankings for what they're worth. We always like to, you know, we dabble in those silly little things, talk about the power rankings a little bit. Power rankings came out on our favorite USA Today. That's the ones that we always kind of point to here at Frat House Sports. Came out today. Very interesting. Top five teams. Take a look at the top five teams. Three of them are AFC teams. Three are AFC teams. Now, a question that I would throw out there, who should be, could be, will be number one in the AFC at the conclusion of it all? Because you could technically, if you wanted to, point at three, perhaps, maybe right now. Two of them are unbeaten. One of them has a loss in the L column. And the two I'm thinking of course, that are unbeaten Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos. But some people might say, well, wait a minute, hold on. Yeah, New England Patriots, make no mistake, they're going to be there in the end. And listen, somebody on this panel, I'm sure, will concur with that. But anyhow, question I throw out there, are the Chiefs right now the best team in the AFC? What else are we going to take a look at this past week? Well, hey, out of this past week, as I just pointed out, the New England Patriots took a loss in week one, a shocking, shocking loss in the first game of the entire NFL season. Just mind-boggling, because this was a team that many people had projected to be unbeaten, 16-0. New England Patriots were going to go 16-0. Well, now they're being projected to be 15-1. Because, look, let's get this. Last week, they went into New Orleans and had their way with the New Orleans Saints. Took the frustrations and their anger out on those Saints. And so we'll take a look at what that game, how that game all went down. We'll also take a look at everybody kind of thought, well, hey, Denver Broncos and the Dallas Cowboys, that's going to be a matchup game for Sunday. Boy, oh, boy, did that turn out to be a snoozer, wasn't it? Dallas Cowboys putting up just 17 points. Where was Ezekiel Elliott? And many people are saying, well, it was just a matter of time before both Zeke and Dak got introduced to the sophomore slump. Yeah, just a matter of time. Well, interesting. Denver Broncos has certainly put the defense on them. That's for darn sure. We'll take a look at that game. The Atlanta Falcons and the Green Bay Packers. Atlanta Falcons, a lot of people, you know, coming off of that, a lot of people kind of thought, well, you know, they're going to be suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, right? Coming out of that abysmal collapse of the Super Bowl from last year. I'm going to tell you right now, they should have no signs of it whatsoever. In fact, that collapse is in their rearview mirror. They are firmly focused, it would appear, on what they have to do in 2017. That's exactly what they did with the Green Bay Packers the other day. And so we will touch on that game as well. Last but not least, we will be highlighting the game from last night, Monday night's game. I don't know whether there's really any highlights. There are a lot of them, I suppose, if you're a Detroit Lion fan, including a defensive pick six. But I'll tell you something, there isn't a darn thing you can possibly positively say if you're a fan of the G-Men. That team looks absolutely pitiful. I'm not joking. They look like they might just be the worst team in the entire NFC. I'll be curious to hear some response on that one as well. Of course, we'll take any calls. If anybody wants to jump in with us, don't hesitate. We would love to hear from you. 347-826-9964. We are talking NFL, and that is all we are talking for the next 90 minutes right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. NFL Week 2, and if you want to throw in a little bit of Week 3, we're talking X's and O's. We're not talking off-the-field sorts of nonsense or dramas that might be going on. We're only talking about box scores. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can catch up with us in our Blog Talk Radio chat room here at Blog Talk Radio, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can find me on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. All right, give me a follow if you're over that way. Make sure you give me a follow, and we can converse over on Twitter, or we can I'll be more than happy to bring your comments to the air from there. All right? All right. Let me get my partner in crime in here who has been working with me on this program, I guess, for the better part. I guess it's got to be our fourth season now, doing Red Zone Blitz on Tuesday nights. Joining me, as always, Brandon. Good evening,
sir.
Brandon.
Good evening.
Before, I used to love to start out talking about the silly power rankings, and I'll touch on them here in a moment. But it does have a feel right now. I mean, early on, 2 weeks in, NFL does have a feel of lack of offense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does seem like the offenses are struggling this year. I can't really explain it, but we've seen this in the past where defenses are ahead of the offense at the beginning of the year. And maybe with the quote unquote newer structure of the off season, you know, with the OTAs, you know, reduced stuff in various training camp hits, et cetera, full practices, it may take the offenses a few weeks to catch up to the defenses because the offenses have less time to prepare. I mean, it's always traditionally been said that defense is always ahead of offense, you know, at the beginning of the year. And,
right.
You know, with the way the rules have changed over the last several, you know, maybe it's finally starting to catch up and it's going to drag, you know, 6-8 weeks into the season till you start seeing some of the offenses start to click. I mean, you can't say that across the board. I mean, obviously Kansas City looks like a world beater right now. And, you know,
and Denver put up 42 points against the Dallas Cowboys. Who'd have thunk that one?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. So, Denver did it. Denver's offense doesn't impress me even putting 42 on Dallas. I'll be honest with you. It just didn't, I don't know. It just didn't look like they were that impressive. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. You know, like I said, it's hard to tell, you know, this early in the year, who's going to be good, who's going to be bad. You know, we've seen a lot of injuries so far this year in the NFL. You know, that's interesting. I mean, you saw, you know, Greg Olsen get a broken foot. He's probably the key offensive cog for Carolina. You know, you saw Gronk go down in the Patriots game with a slight groin injury. You know, we've seen, you know, Jordy Nelson went down early in the Packers game. He's probably their main offensive weapon. We've seen, you know, a bit of injuries this year. Odell Beckham, right? He started the year hurt, you know, and that he didn't look great, you know, last night either. So, you know, I think what it just comes down to, luckily, I think Olsen's injury is the worst of the bunch from what I've read. You know, he had surgery and is going to be out 6-8. Jordy Nelson and Gronk didn't look, from what I've read, aren't looking to be super serious. And Odell Beckham, like you just said, he came back, so he's on the road back. You know, maybe once some of these teams start getting their key guys back, maybe we'll see a little bit better, offensive play.
When you take a look, though, and I hear what you're saying about Greg Olsen, but let me just pick this apart for 1 second, because, you know, I was talking about one of the things I introed the program here with was, you know, teams that seemingly, at least early on, seemingly can't score. And I specifically pointed to Carolina. Carolina's woes, it seems to me right now, Brandon, are not Greg Olsen. And they're not any of the other characters or weapons. They go. Carolina's problems have to be put squarely at the feet of Cam Newton, don't they?
Yeah. Well, even Cam Newton, you know, looked like he was a little hobbled in that game. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he didn't look 100% healthy. They showed him wincing and, you know, coming out. So, you know, it's hard to say. It's just, it could just be a combination of, you know, injuries and, you know, the slow offensive start to the season being exasperated due to the, you know, the training camp, you know, OTA changes. We'll have to see. I mean, you would think we'd see, you know, we haven't really seen a whole lot of dominating offense this year yet. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We've seen a couple games that were blowouts, but, you know, the Raiders have looked pretty solid at, you know, most of the year so far. It's just, I think it's still early. I think we need to get, you know, 4 or 5 games in. Then we can maybe start to say who's going to look like a strong offense. You know what I mean?
If, however, it would seem to me, you know, you kind of said, you know, well, you know, earlier you said, well, you know, it might be 6, 7, 8 weeks before we really start to see the offenses get up to snuff with, you know, their brethren defenses. It would seem to me that might be the last thing in the world the NFL wants to hear when they're continuing to look at TV ratings that are sagging. Article over on Pro Football Talk just today, as a matter of fact, NFL TV ratings are down and NFL touchdowns are down, and those two things are probably related. Well, you know, first of all, I got a little bit of a problem with the opening paragraph, because here's one more time we're going to speculate about why ratings might be down. I mean, we heard all through last year ratings were down because of Colin Kaepernick. Ratings were down because of the election. You know, I'm not necessarily sure that NFL touchdowns being down has had a dramatic impact already 2 weeks into the season. However, statistically, they do go on to say field goals are actually slightly up this season from 1.7 per game to 1.8. That would kind of make sense, because if offenses are going to be down, well, obviously you're going to be, you know, your field goal kicker might come into play a little bit more, because you're not getting, you know, you're not getting your full offenses into the end zone. So that kind of actually makes a little bit of sense. Overall scoring is down from 22.8 points per game to 20.1 points per game. And while that might not sound dramatic when you take a look at it as a total, that is actually a pretty big reduction. I mean, if they said 21.8 to a reduction of 22, I might sit here and say, oh, well, it's negligible. But when you're talking about a full 2.5 point difference, that's pretty substantial. Now, the one thing I'm not certain of is whether these statistics are looking at last year this time, that is last year at week 2, versus this year at week 2. I would hope that that's what these stats are based upon, because I think that's probably the most accurate barometer. We need to be looking at it at the exact same time, not looking at it as, well, these are our stats from all of 2017, and here's the stats for 2018. That's an inaccurate number. But I don't know. It seems to me this is the last thing that the NFL wants to hear when they're struggling and have been for, well, at least documented, well over a year now with TV ratings. They don't want to be hearing, and certainly don't need PFT putting out articles saying, hey, yeah, we've got it confirmed here. Offenses are off. So it seemed to me that's the last thing Roger Goodell and company want to see these offenses get their act together, I would think. Any thoughts on the dramatic decrease aside from the fact that it might just turn around?
I don't know. We've seen this across the board in sports with the ratings. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know if we have, you know, a full concept of the stream and, you know, internet streaming yet. I don't know how they come up with these numbers. And, you know, maybe with all these options, you know, people cutting cords and stuff like that, maybe people just, you know, don't have, you know, some of them may not even have the ability to tune into the games anymore. I don't even know. It's hard to explain, but it seems like it's a systemic problem across the board. You know, in all of sport. I mean, we talk about it in NASCAR all the time. We talk about it in football, which were traditionally, you know, the two highest rated of the sports, you know, basketball and hockey, you can't even really talk about the ratings. They're barely negligible. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the future is going to lie for sports and broadcast and television. You know, yeah. I obviously I don't think it's going away, you know, this week, next year, or the following year, but you know, if the trend keeps going, the $1 billion, you know, TV contracts NFL has been liking aren't going to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to have to find other outlets. You know, we see ESPN looking like they're heading towards a streaming model. They're pushing everything, you know, all their games on all their broadcasts stream on their app. They're pushing it every, you know, every Saturday when you watch college football. You know, they're, ESPN's clearly going towards a streaming model.
Yep.
Who knows what's going to happen, you know, long-term. They may not be able to gauge quote-unquote ratings the way they used to anymore. I don't know what, you know, I'm sure the NFL is concerned, but I still don't think the NFL has to deal with, like, you know, they're not seeing poor attendance at the games yet. Like, you know, other sports are.
Like
some
we
teams,
see in NASCAR.
Some teams are, but, you know, for the most part, when you watch, they pan the crowd at an NFL stadium, it looks packed. So they're doing pretty well that from that point of view. So, you know, this is why, you know, everybody claims this is what value Goodell brings to the NFL and his ability to, you know, generate revenue. And, you know, this sounds like a problem for a good old Raj, you know, to deal with. You know, that's why
yep.
they pay him 40 some million a year. You know,
it seems to me that they just haven't figured out the Rubik's Cube yet. That's what it feels like.
I agree with you. You're absolutely right.
They haven't figured it out.
They're tinkering with things. It seems like they're trying to get all the games in 3 hours. They're
exactly.
making a big deal out of it when they do. So, you know.
I mean, ESPN, I think you make a valid point. I have never heard, you know, the streaming technology promoted the way that I have already 3 weeks into the college football season, the way that I have this year. I've never heard it the way that ESPN is promoting it right now. So it seems to me ESPN is beginning to address it. But as a league, I don't think the NFL has completely figured out what the, you know, what the magic formula is just yet to all of this. And, you know, listen, they've got their own share of other problems that potentially could affect the sport as well, which we've talked about before, but we'll save that for another night and another conversation. What say we jump in to talk about a couple of games that took place this past weekend. You know, we were just talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. AFC, and let me just pull them up here real quick because I had brought it up at the beginning of the program. The power rankings, which came out today over on USA Today, which are the ones I always always point to. I actually said there in the top five, there were three AFC teams. How about I'm wrong? How about there are four in the top five of the power rankings? Four of the five are AFC teams. And Brandon, none of them are the New England Patriots.
Five of the top six are AFC. If you want to get,
well,
you know,
if you want to throw, if you want to throw the New England Patriots in there, but if I you know, I'm just going top five. Top five, Kansas City Chiefs are number one, Atlanta Falcons number two, Oakland Raiders three, Denver Broncos four, Pittsburgh Steelers five. Now, very, very interesting. First of all, let's talk about the Chiefs because that's where I was starting with it. You know, when the Chiefs beat the New England Patriots in game one on that Thursday night, almost 2 weeks ago now, 2 weeks ago this coming Thursday, I was laughing and joking, and I put the article out to everybody in our Frat House Sports panel that suddenly the odds, no joke, the odds in Las Vegas had switched, and suddenly the Kansas City Chiefs were the favorite to win the Super Bowl. which I laughed out loud at because I thought, oh, isn't this so typical of knee-jerking, just a kind of knee-jerk reaction. But I got to tell you something. Mind you, they were playing the Philadelphia Eagles the other day. It was at Arrowhead. But Kansas City Chiefs look pretty darn good. And here I go again. For season after season after season, I have dismissed Alex Smith. But when you take a look at his numbers, you can't ask for much better proficiency than what you saw there. 21 of 28 for 251 yards. Yeah, he only did have the one touchdown. But he had a quarterback rating of 113.8. And listen, they got this new kid, Kareem Hunt, who is just setting the world on fire across the entire league. Everybody's sitting back going, oh, man alive. Boy, oh, boy, wouldn't we have loved to have been able to pick Kareem Hunt? Weren't we morons for not doing so? You look up and down there. I mean, forget Alex Smith. Look up and down the weapons this guy's got to pick from, and it's scary. It's flat-out scary. You throw Kareem Hunt in the mix now. You got Tyreek Hill. You got Travis Kelce. You got Chris Connolly. I mean, it's just flat-out scary what the Kansas City Chiefs have got here. When you take a look at that AFC West, and we can I just wanted to pull it up here real quick. Three out of four
teams at 2-0. Yep.
Three out of four teams are all 2-0, and which is why when you're looking at the power rankings, you've got three of them in the top five, right? Denver,
three in
Oakland,
the top four.
Yep. Right. So when you look at this AFC West,
it's going to be a dogfight.
It's going
to be a dogfight. I'm looking forward to the Chiefs matching up against the Raiders and the Broncos. I think they're going to be good games. Right now, you know, the eye test tells me the Chiefs are probably the best team of the three. I'd like to see more of the Raiders. I think the Raiders have a shot to hang with them, though. Denver, you know, you can't argue with what they've done so far. You know, Trevor Siemian's off to a good start. C.J. Anderson's not off to a bad start. You know, it'll be interesting when they start having to play each other. That's what's going to determine, you know, which one or if any, you know, remains strong of the three in the West. I mean, one of them's going to have to, you know, be more dominant over the others, or else you're going to have, you know, if they just start trading, you know, wins back and forth, it's going to dilute all three of their records. So, you know, somebody's got to, you know, if one of them's going to be a true dominant team and end up with like a, you know, a real good 13-3 or 14-2 season, one of them's going to have to beat, you know, the others, essentially, is what I'm getting at. There's nothing, you know, they can't sit there and start going 3-3 in the division, you know, and continue to, you know, be the class leader. That's probably not going to happen, but I don't know. Right now, all those teams are looking good. I mean, Kansas City looked really good. Obviously, we watched a lot of both games, considering, you know, they played our teams, our you know, our personal favorite team the first week. And you can't argue with what they've done. Mm-hmm. You know, they shut New England down the first week, you know, and Philadelphia, you know, they kind of made it look closer in the end than it really was. I mean, they scored that last second touchdown and, you know, got an onside kick and had a chance at a Hail Mary. So I guess the game, you know, it didn't feel like it was that close, you know, as we were watching it. But, you know, I think the Chiefs are for real. And Alex Smith, I've thought for a while now, I think, you know, he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
No, he doesn't.
All indications are the Chiefs are moving on from him next year, no matter what he does. Because they moved up in the draft to their backup quarterback. His name's slipping me at the moment, but you know they're going to want to go with him next year. And you know everything they're saying is the Chiefs are going to, you know, they're not going to re-sign Smith at the end of the year, supposedly. You know, I'm not thinking that's a good decision. You know, he's one of those quarterbacks who seems to be getting better as he gets older. You know what I mean? You see this as, you know, some quote unquote game manager type quarterbacks. As they get older, yep. they're smarter. And you know, I think Alex Smith falls into that category. And I'm not going to call him a game manager because he's almost too good to, you know, to get that label.
See,
but
that's what I've done with the guy. Forever and a day, I've referred to him as a game manager. And I was just about to say, because you know you were kind of giving a little praise there to the Denver Broncos. I do the same thing with Trevor Siemian. When you take a look at both quarterbacks, Alex Smith and Trevor Siemian, to me they're kind of they're very similar. They're kind of the same, albeit I think I actually give a little bit of a nod more to Alex Smith simply because of the fact. I think he's been around a little bit longer, and therefore he's got a little more experience, to it. Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback that they drafted, the Kansas City Chiefs. And I saw Patrick Mahomes in the preseason, and I got to say, I was highly, highly impressed with Pat Mahomes. And I got to be honest with you, I was not impressed with him coming out of the draft. I was not impressed with him. Particularly last year, his final year in his college career, I was not impressed with him. I thought he went way too high in the draft. But it's very, very interesting because this being Pat Mahomes, technically, when you think about it, Brendan, is really Andy Reid's first quarterback draft pick since he's been with the Chiefs. And you got to wonder whether he's looking at almost kind of, you know, tailoring another Donovan McNabb, you know?
Possibly.
I got to tell you, I'm impressed with Mahomes. I might agree with you. I think that to jettison Smith, you know, immediately next year in favor of Mahomes might be a little premature.
Well, I think what we need to do.
A lot of it's contractually. It's contractual.
And we got to wait and see. I mean, let's just say, for example, the Chiefs go on to have an awesome season, go on to the Super Bowl, even if they don't win the Super Bowl. You know, if say he makes it to the Super Bowl, you know, can you really get rid of a Super Bowl starting quarterback in favor of a, you know, second year rookie? I mean, you know, let's face it. You know, the veteran quarterback who can take you to the dance, that's kind of what every team's looking for, you know. I don't think that, you know, I think we got to wait and see how the season plays out before, you know, anything dramatic like that would happen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Especially, you know, like you know, if the odds makers are right and they are the team that goes all the way, I don't think you can just – the fan base wouldn't allow it, I don't think, at that point.
Looking at the power rankings again, going back to those silly snapshots that we love to put down but we always have a tendency to talk about.
No, that would be you. I don't give them any credence.
I
think they're stupid. It's random votes of sports writers. I'm not giving it any more credence than it deserves. What makes US Today's sports writers any better than NBC's on Pro Football Talk or ESPN's on their website? Nothing. It's all speculation and it's all, you know, their opinion.
When you take the three teams that we just talked about, though, in the AFC West, and looking at it strictly from the standpoint of week two, that's all. That's all we're doing. And as I pointed out, that's what power rankings do. It's a snapshot. It takes a look at what the league looks like right now.
No, they're cumulative. Because if that's the case, the Patriots wouldn't be six. They should be pretty far down on that list after their week one, you know, beating.
All right. Well, yeah, but I think it's looking at the entire league. All right, but because, I mean, look, while the New England Patriots have the exact same record as the Jacksonville Jaguars, you certainly can't put the New England Patriots in the same class as the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Buffalo Bills, who they share a record with. So it really isn't cumulative. It's looking at the league as a snapshot. But if we view it that way, Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs, Oakland Raiders, there's no doubt about it. We've got perhaps maybe some of the better teams in the AFC, certainly in the or in the NFL, certainly in the AFC there. You throw in the Pittsburgh Steelers. Baltimore Ravens are 2-0. Interestingly, Brandon, when you go over to the NFC, you don't get the same feel, do you? There's really only one team over in the NFC you get that same type of feel about, and that's the Atlanta Falcons, isn't it?
Yeah, I would agree. I guess you got to give them their deuce because they are, you know, where they are right now. It doesn't mean though that it's going to stay that way. You know what I mean? I still think teams like the Green Bay Packers. I think I realize the Falcons just beat the Packers, but I got to think, you know, when this all shakes out, the Packers are going to probably be, you know, if not one of the leading contenders in the NFC. You got Seattle, whose offense is struggling right now. I think Atlanta's just, you know, they're a little further along right now in the season, and we'll see. I mean, I don't know if what we're seeing right now is the way it's going to be when it's all said and done.
Obviously,
you know what I mean?
Talking,
I'm not
right.
convinced on Atlanta. Still not.
I concur.
This is one of those quarterbacks to me who always starts the season off really good, and he's only had last year where he's actually finished it and made it all the way to the Super Bowl. So, you know, I'm still just when it comes to that.
Listen,
year.
I concur with you, but understanding the only thing that we can talk about with any kind of certainty is what we have seen through 2 weeks. And if you look at it that way, there really is only you can talk about Carolina Panthers being 2-0 all you want. To me, from what I have seen of the Carolina Panthers, they might as well be 0-2. That's just exactly the way I feel about it. They might as well be 0-2 because I have seen absolutely nothing from the Carolina Panthers that impresses me whatsoever. You could say the exact same thing so far about the Seattle Seahawks with the exception of their defense. Their defense is the only thing, in my opinion, that is keeping the Seattle Seahawks afloat at this point right now. That and the fact that their NFC West division is not very strong. Now, you know, I just completely, in many respects, and, you know, hey, if our good buddy Chris Davis from FT Sports Podcast is listening and wants to call in and yell at me, 347-826-9964, that's how you can get a hold of me, Chris. I've just completely dismissed, haven't I, the Detroit Lions, who last night went 2-0.
No, we just haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay, all right.
I'm not dismissing them at
you
all. I think the Lions have looked awesome this year.
I think Matt Stafford's
probably looking like one of the best quarterbacks of the year so far.
But wait a minute. Don't you put him in that Matt Ryan category? I mean, Matt Stafford is one
honestly,
of those guys.
No. I'll tell you why. He's never had a Julio Jones. You know, he had Calvin Johnson, but Calvin Johnson, even towards the end, I don't know. I can't give it to him. I just can't give it to him. Stafford just looks better.
Wow.
To me.
And listen, I'm not putting the guy down. I've always I'm not going to necessarily say I'm not a Matt Stafford hater. But I can't necessarily sit here and say, well, you know, I think he's one of the great. He's mid-pack. You know, he's a mid-pack quarterback. That's kind of – maybe he's slightly above mid-pack, slightly above it. That's where I would put him. All right, anyhow, getting back over to this Kansas City game that we were kind of diagnosing a little bit. Obviously, you know, I listen to a lot of Philadelphia sports talk radio, you know, being the Philadelphia Eagles fan that I am. Carson Wentz, 25 of 46. I thought Carson Wentz looked very good in the game, and I frankly thought that, in fact, I thought that he was the reason in many respects that the that the Eagles were in the game as long as they were. I mean, let's get this one straight. If I'm not mistaken, I think they were only 7 points down going into the fourth quarter. So this was the game that the Eagles could have won. Now, there's been a lot of 25 of 46, 333 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. You come away from that, you say, hey, not bad numbers. Okay, except for the fact he put the ball in the air almost 50 times and missed completions on 21 of those. Then you have to go over to, I don't know what the hell the Eagles game plan was versus this Chiefs. Well, Brandon, there was no ground game. There was no.
I would agree. When your quarterback is your leading rusher, you have a problem. I think the Eagles have improved at the wide receiver position, which was a problem last year. I think they're significantly better. I think Zach Ertz is off to a good start. Even Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, they try to stretch. You know, they've tried a couple deep balls to Torrey. You know, and I think they're in the right. You know, what is it? The right church? Maybe just the wrong pew. They need to get their running game just a little better. Once they get the running game established, you know, they don't call enough runs for one. I'm looking at the stats. They called 13 plays to handoffs to running backs. You know, 10 to Darren Sproles and 3 to Smallwood. You know, I highly doubt the 4 carries for 55 yards Carson Wentz had, a lot of those were improvised. I do not believe they were, planned runs.
They weren't scripted. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, out of 60 plays, only 25%, and I'm stretching here, are rushes. Come on. That's not the way you call a game. You got to get more balance.
Not a single play to LeGarrette Blount, who you're paying $1 million a year to.
Yeah, that's true.
What
I
in
mean,
the world?
And LeGarrette Blount, I can say it, you know, from his years with New England, he really gets going as the game gets going. If you're not involving him, you know, early and keeping him involved and getting him, you know, hit, you know, that's when he starts to get stronger. And he's not even seeing the field. I don't even see him lining up in a formation, let alone getting a carry. I didn't see him on the field one time in that game against the Chiefs. You know,
I agree with you, Brandon. I did neither.
I don't know.
I didn't either.
I don't think that's the way to utilize, you know, your team. Actually, he must have been on the field because they did attempt to throw the ball to him once. He has one target for 0 yards.
Yep.
I guess he caught it. I guess it's actually a catch. It's a reception. He has one reception for 0 yards.
Scary stat. Carson Wentz led the entire league last year in attempted passes, quarterbacks and attempted passes. Carson Wentz right now is on track to break that record this year.
That's not a good sign if you're an Eagles fan.
It is not. It is not a good sign. That is not a good sign at all. Because the Philadelphia Eagles fans have been fortunate that their quarterback, their young quarterback, has not lost a game. He hasn't missed a single game, but you can't count on that forever. At some point or another, he's going to take a hit and, in is going to be coming, Nick Foles or whoever is backing up Carson Wentz on that particular day. So,
Isn't Nick Foles the backup?
What I'm saying. Yeah, but he was out to start the season. I don't know who the backup now is at this point. I have to look up who the backup to the backup is. Eagles play the Giants this week, so we'll see whether that ground game situation gets addressed. I don't know. That to me, that could have been the difference right there. Whether this game could have been won by the Philadelphia Eagles or not, is if they just had even a modicum of a ground game going. Had they had that going, they might have actually pulled this game off, because Philadelphia had Kansas City's number, I think, for a good portion of this game. Again, if anybody wants to jump in with us, we got about 45 minutes here that we're talking a lot of things that went down in week two, and we've kind of mixed it all around as we usually do here, just kind of jumping around from one team to another with our observations. If you want to throw yours in there as well, don't hesitate. 347-826-9964 is how you can get a hold of us here at Frat House Sports, or you can hit me up in our Blog Talk Radio chat room or over on Twitter at Frat House Mike is how you can get me on Twitter. 347-826-9964. All right, now let's. We were talking a little bit early on too about your team, the New England Patriots. They had taken that first week loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, and then came right back this past week, and boy, oh boy, put the number on New Orleans in New Orleans. 36-20 was the final score in that one. Tom Brady was, holy smokes. I mean, you know, I haven't seen the fantasy numbers in our fantasy league. 30 of 39, 447 yards, three touchdowns, 139.6 passer rating. If I recall correctly, if you recall, at one point you came into the room, I think it was at the beginning of the second half, and I said, holy smokes, he's over 300 yards just in the first half. Yep. I mean, it was just, you know, for I loved it because one of the, you know, you saw the memes like on Monday, you know, the rumors of my demise were, you know, greatly exaggerated. Yeah, greatly exaggerated. Because of course that was the talk, that was the chit chat after game one. You know, well, Tom Brady certainly looked his age, and this, you know, it's over now for the New England Patriots, and over for Tom Brady. You know, something about the guy, he just goes out and he gets pissed off, right? I mean, that's what this was. This was a.
You
want to
know what?
Off.
You want to know what makes it even more impressive? They suited up three wide receivers for this game because of injury. They literally only had three wide receivers dressed for this game. They did all that offense with a lot of two tight end sets. And then even during the game lost Gronk. Now, granted, he played most of it, but you know, towards the end, he was out. They find a way somehow, some way. Chris Hogan was like limping on the sidelines almost after every play. Yet they managed to, you know, put together a pretty solid game, you know, and New Orleans just couldn't compete.
So who were the three? Who were the three wide receivers? Was it
Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett, and Cooks, Brandon Cooks? That's the only three they had healthy to start the game, as far as wide receivers. I mean, they had James White, they had Burkhead, they had Deion Lewis and James Devlin, all catch passes out of the backfield. You know, they used what they got. You know what I mean? Gronk had six catches for 100 yards and a touchdown. You know, I think that, like I said, they just used what they had. And
this,
you know,
is
what they
the
did.
Thing that people just don't, they just can't seem to figure out. When you start comparing your team against the New England Patriots, and I don't care who your team is. It could be, in my case, the Philadelphia Eagles. But my team could be anybody. It could be the Baltimore Ravens, you know, for all I care. When you start comparing your team, what is the one thing that always comes up in everybody's explanation is this team, the New England Patriots, always just seem to find a way to, number one, beat you, and number two, they will use whatever they have available. It's got to go to the genius of Bill Belichick, doesn't it?
To a degree, but you know, the Chiefs game was almost a function of not being able to react fast enough to the issues. You know, they lost Julian Edelman in that game to a concussion. They had three different guys trying to field punts after that. You know, they didn't react very well. you know, on the fly early to, you know, to the Chiefs. You know, they did manage to, you know, hold on to this game, but by the time, you know, they had, you know, the injury to the Gronk and all that, they were way ahead. You know, I'm hoping it's not, he doesn't miss any time from it, because, you know, the Patriots aren't in a position where they can, you know, they don't have a whole lot left in the bank, as they say. I don't know where Julian Edelman's at in the concussion protocol, but he's had a few, or not Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, sorry. Danny Amendola, but, you know, we lost Edelman in the preseason, and now you got, you know, Amendola's your, you know, replacement, and he's out hurt. So it's like, where do you go from here? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, there's only so many, you know, pieces you can move on the chessboard, as they like to say. You start to run out of pieces. You know, that's what's worrying me right now as a Patriots fan is all the injuries we've faced early, and key injuries were faced early. I mean, they were out of linebackers, you know, week one. That, you know, everybody was hurt. You know, it's just like, you know, they gotta find a way. I'm still not super impressed with the Patriots defense. You know, they allowed almost, what, 350 passing yards to Drew Brees. They're not where they need to be as a team as they were last year. They have to fill in some holes and, you know, get, you know, maybe get some injured players back and, you know, see where things end up. I think Rob Ninkovich will end up being a Patriot before the season's over. I think what they've decided to do is, you know, give him, you know, the first 6 weeks off per se. And they probably have a, you know, wink nod agreement with him that, you know, hey, you know, you think you can give us a, you know, solid 10 games at the end of the year. I think that's kind of what you're going to see. I think, I don't know what the number is. I'm just guessing on the number, but I think you will see Rob Ninkovich be a active Patriot again, come out of retirement and be on the
so
team.
So you think that image of him at this past week's game in the box with the owner, you think that was like setting up the final deal?
I don't know if it's setting up any deal. I don't think, I honestly think Kraft lets the deal making to the football people. I really do. I think he doesn't meddle in the things. I think there's one player on the New England Patriots that Robert Kraft would meddle with, and that's Tom Brady. I think he will be involved in the decision when Tom Brady's done, whenever that comes. You know, I think that's the only thing he would meddle in as the owner. Otherwise, he leaves it up to, you know, Belichick and the player personnel people. So I just got to think, you know, this team doesn't really have, without Hightower on the field, you know, I just don't know, you know, who's the defensive, you know, leader. And I think Ninkovich could fill that role. So I think it's just going to depend on how, you know, how the season plays out. But I think you will see him back on the team. Do I think they're better than the Chiefs right now? No, I don't. I'll tell you straight out.
Oh, okay.
I don't think, right. I think the Chiefs, well, I think the Raiders, I think they'd have a hard time beating the Broncos right now.
Ooh.
I think they beat up on the Saints because the Saints are just not a very good team.
Well,
you know?
let me stay right there for a moment, because I got to be honest with you. I watched that game obviously the other day on Sunday as well. And that is the New England and Saints game. God, it was difficult to watch this Saints team, wasn't it? And particularly when you stood back and you watched somebody like Drew Brees, who really, really has had a great career. And, you know, probably one of the most likable guys, really, when it comes right down to it, in all of the NFL. You know, there's a handful of really, really likable guys. Drew Brees, I would put in that group of really, really likable guys. God, this was tough to watch, this game. Because this team just is not good. And Drew Brees, you know, is doing it. It really looked to me like he was doing everything he possibly could with the little bit that he has. And it just isn't enough. 27 of 45. Now, mind you, he didn't have an interception, so that's good. But he had to put the ball in the air 45 times. It's just absolutely incredible. Go ahead. Your thoughts on it.
Can I ask a question? Why did the New Orleans Saints sign Adrian Peterson if they're not going to play him?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
Adrian Peterson has been invisible. And when he's on the field, you know, everybody knows they're going to hand the ball off to him. And, you know, everybody lines up in the box against him and they stop him. Seriously, if you're going to sign a player of that caliber, you got to look at the way he has been with the Vikings. He needs to be in the game. He needs to get a lot of touches. He needs to be involved early. He needs to stay involved in the game. And in the second half, he takes over. Why would the New Orleans Saints, if they're only going to put him on the field on the few times they're going to hand off to him, why even bother signing him? I'm just curious because they clearly, you know, they clearly want to have Ingram involved. They got this new guy, Kamara, who looks really good.
Yep.
I don't understand the rationale. I don't understand why the decision was made to sign Adrian Peterson to begin with. Because now all you got is a pouting Adrian Peterson yelling at the coaches on the sideline. What good is that doing your team? I'm sorry. I think the Saints kind of put themselves in a bad position. You know, they had other issues. You know, they should have got, you know, invested that money in some linemen, you know, and maybe keep Drew Brees from taking such a beating. You know, it is, what is he, 38, 39 years old? He's up there. He's not too much
38.
Younger than Brady. So it's like, you know, I just don't understand the way they made up their team this year.
Well, I would
agree. If they wanted to start feeding Peterson, I'd be okay with it, you know, but don't let Drew Brees back there to get beat up if you're just going to have, you know, play Peterson the way you play him.
I just
don't get it.
I'm just taking a look here. In some respects, Brees did get beat up a little bit. He was hit seven or eight times.
Yep.
He was only sacked once, but I mean, he was knocked around a heck of a lot of times. And the question you're asking about Peterson is the exact same question. You know, it goes back to what we were talking about here in Philadelphia. It's the exact same question everybody was asking with regard to LeGarrette Blount. If you're going to get a beast like LeGarrette Blount, who needs to have the ball fed to him constantly and really get into the game, why in the world are you not even handing the ball off to him? Adrian Peterson this past week actually comes out and made the comment, you know, I didn't sign up for 9 snaps.
Yep.
So he's making it clear that he's not happy with the current situation.
9 snaps and he had 8 carries. So what does that tell you? He's only on the field when he's going to get handed the ball, which means he's not going to be effective.
And I'm sure that Sean Payton was asked about it, you know, in a post game. I'm sure. I actually did not hear what Payton's response might be. I'll actually see if I can actually find perhaps maybe some of that audio for Thursday night's show. But I don't know. I don't know. I mean, this is just me. If I'm a general manager in the NFL, I'm not signing Adrian Peterson. Now, and it has nothing to do with his personal issues. That has nothing to do with it. I wouldn't do it simply because of the fact that I'm not sure how much the guy really has left in the tank. That's just my personal opinion. I'm not doing it. But when you take a look at a team like New Orleans doesn't have anybody else. They don't have anything else. They got Mark Ingram. And in my opinion, Mark Ingram has already shown over the past number of seasons he is what he is, which isn't even, in my opinion, a top 15 running back, period. He's not a top 15 running back. I hear you. I understand your question. You know, New Orleans needs somebody like Adrian Peterson. If I had been New Orleans's general manager, I might not have made him a priority for me. But they did. They obviously have the need for a running back. Why aren't you using them? I hear you. I completely concur with. And you got to wonder whether
I've read that there's already been question as to whether they might trade him before the trade deadline. That question has come up already. Because, you know, he's clearly not going to be happy you know, with the role he has. And the longer it goes, the more he's just going to become disgruntled.
Well,
so, you know, a team that, you know, feeds a running back. I had heard like maybe the New York Giants would be a nice landing spot for him. You know, I don't know. I'm confused.
Why would they bring him in to begin with? If you're really going to trade him.
If you sign him, you got to be committed to a run first type offense, and they're not. That's not what you see when you see the Saints. You know, you see Drew Brees going back to pass 45 times. You know, that's not what the Minnesota Vikings did all the years. You know, they had success with Peterson. You know, you got to, you know, tailor your game, your offense around him, and that's not the way they do it. So I don't understand the signing to begin with. I'm going to stick to my original statement. Why sign him if you're not going to use him? So
and if they're going to be, I mean, if already by week two we're already talking about, you know, potentially trading him, that just doesn't make any damn sense either. It's almost as if they signed him, they got him in, and perhaps maybe Sean Payton and company said, oh, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work with us. I mean, you know, obviously then what we've got is, and I don't know who the general manager is down there in New Orleans, but then obviously what we're talking about, I thought it was Sean Payton. I thought Sean Payton made a lot of the decisions.
I think he does. I think he has a say. Let's put it that way.
I mean, you know, what the hell's going on here?
I don't understand. I do not understand why he's even on the roster if you're only going to have him on the field for 9 plays and hand him the ball 8 of the 9. I think he's been on almost every play between the first 2 games. He's been handed the ball, and everybody knows he's getting the ball because he's on the field. He's not even lining up in any pass plays. So, you know, that kind of thing is not going to work. I don't see that working long term.
Well,
so,
I'm not sure. I'm just checking here real quick. I just wanted to see something. I'm not sure whether it's going to get any better this week, Brandon, because New Orleans is going to Carolina to play the Panthers. And if I'm not mistaken, the Panthers have a pretty good rush defense. Yeah, they do. They're only ranked number 5 in the entire league.
Well, maybe the fact that the Panthers don't score at a high pace might keep the game manageable for the Saints. I think that's the kind of thing. I think that's what happened to the Saints against the Patriots. The game got out of control in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tom Brady went off in the first half.
So, and then Sean Payton said, "Well, we can't
do a ground
game.
We're playing from behind." Right. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think if they had a slower pace scoring game, which I don't think they're going to get the same kind of game, you know, out of the Panthers, I don't think that's going to be an issue. So maybe they can figure out a way to get it to work. But the first 2 weeks have not looked good, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's jump over. We'll take a look at the Denver Broncos and the Dallas Cowboys. Broncos, as we pointed out, here we are. We're back in the AFC West again. We've already talked a little bit about the AFC West. Broncos 42-17 over the Dallas Cowboys. This game in Mile High. I guess the big thing to take away from this one, Brandon, because we've already talked quite a bit already about the Denver Broncos. I mean, they put up 42 points and they put them up every way you could possibly imagine. They had 178 yards on the ground. 118 of those came from CJ Anderson. So Anderson had his way with the Dallas defense. No problem there. Trevor Siemian had 4 touchdowns. I mean, it was insane how much offense was going on one side of the ball, only one side. I think really the story out of this game was what wasn't happening on the Dallas side of the ball. While Dak Prescott was back there putting up the ball 50 times, he went 30 of 50, 50 times in the air. We're seeing, I mean, the third game in a row here, we're talking about quarterbacks putting up the ball a ridiculous number of times. Zeke Elliott was non-existent on the ground, absolutely non-existent. The Denver defense shut him down. At one point, I think it was going into the fourth quarter, he had 0 yards on the ground, 0. Ultimately ended up with 8 yards total on 9 carries. And so, you know, a lot of people coming out of this game saying, well, now look at there. Dak Prescott didn't look too good. Zeke Elliott, all he had to show was 59 yards through the air. That was all he had to show for it. Or actually, I'm wrong. 14 yards through the air for Zeke Elliott. What do you make of the Dallas Cowboys? They did not look like the Dallas Cowboys of last year. That's for darn sure.
No, they didn't. They did not look good. They played a good defense who shut them down early. And, you know, we heard a lot of questions about effort coming out of Dallas Cowboys and, you know, their second year players. So, you know, they need to right the ship. I mean, they've had a lot of distractions already this year with the whole Zeke Elliott mess. You know, now you got, you know, them questioning Zeke Elliott's, you know, work ethic in the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's not good. You know, you can't have that if you're Dallas, and it was coming across the board. I saw comments from, you know, the head coach, comments from the owner trying to deflect away from Zeke Elliott to other players. Like, let's not start pointing fingers week 2, you know? To me, Dallas is still the favorite in the East, in my opinion. And you're going to start this kind of infighting week 2, really? You got your butts kicked by a good defense. You know, let's try to stick together and we'll move on. You know, it happens. You know, a lot of teams go into Mile High, you know, in that thin air, and, you know, Denver, you know, finds a way to control them. They're used to it. They're used to the conditions. They're used to the stadium. You know, that Denver is one of the few or I'm not going to say few, but they're one of the teams that has a better home field advantage. And they know how to use it. And, you know, sometimes not every team can go in there. And if they go in there with the intent of shutting, you know, Elliott down, which they clearly did, you know, they got to find other ways around it. You know, Dez Bryant only at 7 catches for 59 yards. That is kind of just ho-hum for Dez Bryant. I mean, he had a touchdown, but, I mean, none of the other players, with the exception of Witten, put up any kind of game from Dallas. You know, and they need to when you come across a team with the defense caliber, the Broncos shutting down your running game, you got to find other ways around it, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it almost seemed as if Denver got up on them fast. I think it was 21-7 as we were nearing the half. I think at halftime it was 21-10. But it was almost as if they got on them fast, Brandon, and you could almost see the wind come out of Dallas' sails at that point. And now, you know, that might be going to some of what was observed or some of what was discussed, some of what was talked about, the effort thing that you're talking about, the commitment mm-hmm. thing that you're talking about, you know.
Well, the Aqib Talib pick 6 play, you know, players are standing around, not even trying to tackle him, so.
Yep, yep. Of course, that came late in the game, so.
I understand, but that's not the point. That's where a lot of those effort questions came from.
It just looked to me like, you know, I hate to say it, but it almost did look like they kind of were either stunned or just, yeah, they gave up. They were either mm-hmm. stunned or gave up. Yeah. Yeah. I hate to put it that way, but that's what it sounded like.
That's what it looked like. They did not look like the team they were last year. But then again, they didn't get smacked in the mouth by a defense of the caliber of the Broncos much last year either. You know, I don't think there's many. I think the Broncos have got to be in the top 2 or 3 defenses in the entire league right now. And they've been for a number of years. Even going back to, you know, the Peyton Manning Super Bowls, they've had solid defenses. And they mm-hmm. still have a lot of those same guys. They have Aqib Talib. They have the guy, I can never remember his name, the guy in the commercials. You know, they have a solid core defense, and they're not going to, you know, bend. They've been consistent. So, you know, that Dallas just has to find a way to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm just biased, but I think the AFC has stronger teams overall than the NFC. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to continue to see that. I mean, you got, like we brought up in the very beginning, you got three teams at 2-0 in the AFC West who all look good on both sides of the ball. I mean, the Broncos look good on both sides of the ball. The Raiders look good on both sides of the ball. And the Chiefs look good on both sides of the ball. You know, Dallas really hasn't yet, you know, so we'll see how they do. Again, it's week two. I mean, I don't know if it's a factor of social media and, you know, you have so many internet outlets of, you know, people giving opinions, but, you know, week two is kind of early in the year to start, you know, the kind of crap that you're seeing that coming out of the Dallas locker room this week.
I would agree with you.
Especially when your first week was a win. I mean, you have one loss. You know, it's just like, why does this get so exasperated so fast anymore?
Well, you know, I got to ask you, and not that it's on the list here, but I got to ask you what your thoughts were. I don't know if you saw the comments from Ben McAdoo, head coach of the New York Giants, who essentially threw Eli Manning under the bus this morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that a lot around the year league this year. I don't understand why. You know, I mean, the old, you know, tighten the ranks, keep everything in your clubhouse kind of mentality has always been the way. And it seems like that's just going out the window, with the exception of some teams. And, you know, those teams continue to do well. You know, I mean, New England does. You don't ever hear any of that. You won't hear it. I was reading the press conference today. They were asking about Malcolm Butler, how he's seen, you know, a lot less plays this week. And Belichick and Matt Patricia, they ain't saying nothing. They ain't signaling out a player. They're saying we're on to this year. It's defense this year. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, they're not, they won't call out players, even when they're goaded to by the media and people interviewing them.
Right.
I don't understand why McAdoo would go and take, you know, Eli Manning and throw him under the bus, you know, exclusively. I mean, that game last night,
and
I think the Giants were just not the better team. I think Detroit.
Oh God, they looked
I think
horrible.
Detroit's just a better team. You got to face the facts sometimes.
And let me jump over to it real quick since we're bringing it up. I mean, we might as well, because we got about 15 minutes here remaining. New York Giants, and mind you, this was the NFC East is a division that we walked into this year, I think, where there were a lot of, you want to talk about prognosticators, that's all you possibly could be, because I don't think anybody really, there's no dominance in the NFC East at all, none. If anything, there's a whole load of question marks. But I got to be honest with you, I heard one person after another say New York Giants are the best in the NFC East, the New York Giants. I didn't think so. I thought, as you have said, I thought you had to come back and say, well, wait a minute. You can't dismiss what the Dallas Cowboys did last year. So you got to give that a little bit of credence and credibility. New York Giants team looked absolutely pitiful last night. Now, having said that, going to the play that McAdoo was highly critical of Eli Manning for was that late, if I'm not mistaken, fourth quarter, where they were trying for a fourth down in the red zone, which would have given them, if I'm not mistaken, a first down inside the 5-yard line, and apparently they ran out of time. And
well,
so
no,
they
what
ended
they
up
did is they threw
they
the
ended
ball
up getting,
to no,
no
I think
getting,
on that
they got a delay a game penalty. That's what he threw him under the bus for.
Yeah, but on the fourth down play they threw the ball to Beckham well short of the first down. So they didn't even they didn't even execute when they did get on the field. So I don't know. I don't know why all of a sudden coaches are doing this. I don't think it's going to be,
with all due respect,
a good model.
Of, regardless of which play it was, whether it was the delay game or whether it was the fourth down, you know, we're going for the fourth down and he doesn't get the, regardless, I don't see how you necessarily take Eli Manning and throw him exclusively under the bus for that particular play. That's just my personal opinion.
I would agree with you.
Eli Manning did not look great the entire game, but I wouldn't throw him under the bus for just that one play. That's just my personal opinion. And, you know, again, this was a game not dissimilar. This Giants-Lions game was not – it was a game not dissimilar to the Eagles-Chiefs game, where it seemed to me that the Giants were in it. It felt like for almost the entire game. They were almost there. They just, you know, it was, I mean, you had the pick six, you had the pick six for Detroit. That didn't help. But it just felt like the Giants possibly could have pulled this one off. And yet they looked so damn bad. I don't know how to explain it. I just don't know how to explain it. They looked horrible in what could have been a win.
Could have been a win, but I don't think you're giving enough credit to the other side of the ball. I think Detroit Lions played a solid game. You know, they have a good mix of pass and run. They get, you know, their defense is doing a good job so far. Maybe we're looking at the team that's the sleeper this year. You know, you always see it every year where somebody comes up, you know, and they're better than everybody expected them to be. Detroit might be that team. They may be the ones who end with a, you know, 13-3 record, you know, in the NFC Championship game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The Giants just haven't impressed me, period, for the last couple of years, and the moves they make don't seem to be what the team needs. I think their defense just gets older every year and less effective. Eli is what Eli is. I don't think he's a bad quarterback, but he's not an elite quarterback. I don't care what anybody, you know, says. I mean, he's a solid NFL quarterback. Definitely in the second tier of quarterbacks. I mean, he's definitely not, you know, the first tier. So I just don't see them winning many games, and they haven't so far. They're 0-2, and I don't think they're going to get any better when you got your head coach calling out your starting quarterback.
Yep.
In week two.
The New York Giants will play Philadelphia in Philadelphia this coming week.
I think the Eagles will just tear the Giants apart.
Well, I'm not – boy, I'm not so convinced.
I think that matchup's in their favor.
This is going to be a Giants team that's going to come in and going to be pissed off.
Well,
I'm going to have to say my personal opinion. The line opened yesterday before the Giants game. The line opened at 3. Brandon, the line right now is at 6 in favor of Philadelphia. So, anyhow. Last but not least, we'll chit-chat here real quick about the Green Bay Packers and the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons won this game 34-23. Let's talk about a quarterback who put the ball in the air one more time. How about that? Because we've only done it for, I think, all 4 games, right?
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers put the ball in the air 50 times, 343 yards, completed 33 of those 50 attempts, 2 touchdowns, 1 interception, 90.7 passer rating. How many seasons in a row have I looked at this sort of thing? It feels like, and you look at the box scores and you go to the Green Bay rushing game and there's nothing, virtually nothing there. Ty Montgomery, 35 yards on 10 carries. This team had 59 yards rushing. That was it, which is why Aaron Rodgers had to put the ball in the air 50 times. I mean, it was positively ridiculous. I mean, in my opinion. And Brandon, I'm going to be honest with you. I came away from this with a bad feeling about the Green Bay Packers. I don't know why, but I did. This does not feel like the same sort of Green Bay Packer team that we have seen in the past. It does not feel like it at all. I think this
game was affected by the early injury of Jordy Nelson. He's going to be heavily involved in their game plan. And if you lose your number one receiver, you know, on the first series like they did, you know, it's going to change things and you got to adapt on the fly. And you know, clearly it took them a while. Rodgers put up some solid numbers. I just never got the feeling they were going to win the game. You know, Atlanta had the game, you know, pretty much in hand the whole game. And I think losing Jordy in the beginning hurt their game plan a bit. I think I'm not going to throw up warning flags yet because I've heard the injury is not a major injury and hopefully he won't miss much, if any, time. So I think Green Bay is going to be fine. I think it was just, you know, circumstances, the way the game played out. You got to also remember Atlanta opened their brand new stadium. So they're going to be pumped up. You know, it's their opening game at their new palatial stadium. You know, it's always going to be hard for any team to go in there, you know, and win that game. So I'm not going to start raising flags on Green Bay just yet. You know, clearly it hurts losing your number one receiver early, but you know, I think there were other things you got to look at in this game too, you know, being where it was and what it meant to the Falcons being their, you know, first game in that new stadium.
Well, I hear what you're saying about, you know, Aaron Rodgers put up some decent numbers, and I would agree with you, he did, but...
You're right. They need to find a way to get more running, you know, a better running attack. You're right.
They need that, but, I mean, there were just a lot of, I don't know, sloppy play, Brandon, just sloppy play. 31-7 was the score for the Atlanta Falcons early in the second half of this game. Mm-hmm. It started off the second half with a fumble return touchdown by the Atlanta special teams. I mean, just bad plays. Just, I don't know. That's why I came away from this with a bad feeling about the Green Bay Packers.
Well, one thing I will tell you is it's always harder for teams to play from behind. You know what I mean? So the Falcons, you know, they had a pretty, as you said, they were what, 31 to what at the end of the
seven.
Half? 31-7. You know, you're playing from behind. You're playing from behind that, you know, early into the second half like that. That's tough. That tends to, you know, lead to more sloppy play. You know, so I'm not trying to make excuses for the Packers either, but you know, at the same time, there are a lot of other things involved with this game that, you know, made it a little tougher for them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I had, that I had suggested, when we were making our picks last Thursday night on the Fred L. Sports Show, I said, hey, Atlanta, one of the things you need to do, really get your ground game going. If you take a look back at the numbers from the week before, Atlanta, they won that game, but they really didn't have a ground game to show up. They did get a ground game going against Green Bay, 141 yards on the ground against Green Bay, 84 of them coming from Devonta Freeman. So Devonta Freeman finally showed up, didn't show up in game one, first game of the season, but showed up for this one. Atlanta Falcons, at least so far, as I pointed out, in introducing the program, do not appear to be a team that is suffering any PTSD from the collapse of the Super Bowl. I know that you've said, you made the comment, Brandon, you said, I'm hands off on the Falcons because I'm never quite sure exactly what Matt Ryan is, but I don't know. They, as I pointed out, if there's a team in the NFC that feels like the dominant team at week two, it has to be the Atlanta Falcons. That's who it would be. So
I would disagree. I think Detroit, and even though Seattle hasn't put up the best offensive numbers, they've been pretty they look pretty decent at times. I'm not ready to anoint the Falcons just yet. I want to see Matt Ryan win a big game in like week 13, week 14. You know, then maybe I'll be convinced a little better about the Falcons. He always starts off really good.
I'm just looking up. Matt Ryan's numbers. He's eighth right now in the league in completion percentage at 69. Matt Stafford at 71%. Matt Ryan at 69%. Okay. Well, interesting.
I don't think. I think it's in 2 weeks. It's really hard to call any team in the conference dominant yet. I mean, you got, like I said, you got to give props to the three AFC West teams. I think they all look good. They all have the potential. You can't eliminate Atlanta, but I'm not sold. I like what I've seen out of Detroit. I think they've looked very good in their two games. You know, I'm not ready to dismiss Dallas yet. I think this could have just been an aberration. See how they bounce back from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see other teams emerge till we're all said and done.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think we're.
I agree. I mean,
there's a few teams you can probably say, yeah, all right, we're done.
Well, I don't know if I would do that with any of them so far. I'm going to be honest with you. Seriously, I wouldn't do that with any of them.
Chicago, maybe. They look pretty bad.
Maybe Chicago. But guess what? I wouldn't even do it with Cleveland. I wouldn't do it with Cleveland. I wouldn't do it with Miami yet. So, let me do this because we are talking a little bit of football. I'll tell you what, as we only have about 2 minutes remaining here for this evening, we've already run through 90 minutes of X-ing and O-ing at least some of the bigger games that we identified from this past NFL Week 2. What you want to do is get ready for NFL Week 3, and you want to be here on Thursday night for our Frat House Sports Show, because what we will be doing is, amongst many, many things, we will be making our NFL picks of the week. And I don't know if you've checked the list yet, Brandon, but holy smokes. I suggested like three or four or five games. Chris comes back. He suggests two additional games. Matt comes in. He suggests another one. I think right now, well, there's eight games that are being suggested, of which we've got to talk about four of them. So
wow,
you're going to want to take
I
a look.
Honestly haven't had a chance to look at, you know, next week yet. It was trying you're to make sure we're ready for tonight. So
You're going to want to take a look at that list, because I don't know where we're going to be. I don't know what games we're going to be picking, but I can tell you one of them absolutely will be the Falcons at the Lions. We will be talking about that game. There's no doubt about it. Absolutely. We're going to be talking about that game. So guaranteed you're going to want to be here on Thursday night as we will be joined in here by our guest co-host Chris Davis from FT Sports Podcast, sitting in for Sidekick, and 7 p.m. Eastern time for our Frat House Sports Show number 311 coming your way on Thursday night. And then we will be back here as well on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. to chit-chat a little bit of motorsports and NASCAR as we head into playoff race number two. My goodness, I didn't even check. Where are we going to be this week, Brandon? Do you know off the top of your head? Where is NASCAR at this week? I don't even know.
Honestly, I'm not
100%
sure.
Chicagoland, where do we go? Anyhow,
I know Dover's
be
coming, but I don't think it's this week. I think it's a week away.
Yeah, wherever we're going to be, guess what? We will be talking about it, folks. So you want to be here at 11 a.m. Eastern time for another Race Trim Motorsports Hour on Sunday morning. All right? There you go. All right, Brandon, thank you very much. And everybody out there, make sure you're here with us on Thursday night. All right? Many thanks to everybody that's been listening, and catch you just in two nights from now. That's it. Two nights from now. We'll be back. All right? Catch you then.